Hello, and thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Perceptive Photographer. I'm your host, Daniel Gregory. I hope you're having a great week, getting a chance to get out there and make some amazing photographs or print some amazing photographs or just do something creative. I've had a really interesting experience the past couple of days. I've been working with a number of different people on some photographs, and it got me digging back into my own archive and trying to sort out a problem that I've experienced in my own work off and on over the years. And I love to take photographs where things appear chaotic. So I like to go into the forest and photograph where there's a seemingly chaotic world. And I know the photograph makes sense for me, but when other people look at it, they see a highly chaotic image, and they really struggle with how to figure that out. And I've been working with a couple of other photographers, and they've been having a similar experience. They're taking some photographs that just seem on the surface to be highly chaotic. There's a structure that's starting to organize within the photographs. But really what we're attempting to do together is figure out, how do we make sense out of this sort of chaotic world? And so one of the things that got me researching and looking into that I had learned back in college, but had kind of forgotten, but now I think has a really strong application in into photography, and that's the Gestalt psychology, which was developed in Germany around 1912, 1915, somewhere in there. And what they were looking at was trying to understand the laws behind the human mind's ability to capture and create perceptions of a chaotic world. And the central premise of Gestalt psychology is that we see the whole, and then within the whole, we start to organize based on parts that are within that whole. So this is where the phrase, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, comes from, is this form of research and understanding. And in the creation of how we use Gestalt perception, a number of laws or tendencies were created. And a couple of those, I think, are really prevalent for photography. And I wanted to talk about two of those today. I wanted to talk about one of the things they call the law of proximity, and another one is what they consider the law of closure. Next week, I'm going to talk about two other areas of the Gestalt psychology that I think are relevant to photography. But this week, I wanted to focus in really and expand on these two particular points. When we return back to the law of proximity, what that law states is that when we perceive an object, we perceive the things that are close to it as forming a group or having a relationship of some kind. And this is one of the things that I think happens a lot when we start to deal with photography early on when you're still learning to shoot. And the classic example is somebody will say, oh, there's a pole coming out of somebody's head. And when you're shooting in the three-dimensional world, you don't notice the pole sticking out behind the head. But when it becomes a two-dimensional object, when you actually create the photograph, then the pole becomes obviously as it sticks out of somebody's head. The relationship between the pole and the person's head is created by the proximity within the image. That proximity is what allows us to experience those two things as being very strongly related in space because of their relative position on top of one another. It is really easy to see the experience of how proximity comes into play. So I have a little experiment for you to do. What I want you to do is get out a piece of paper and a pencil. And I want you to write down three words. I want you to write down the word heart, the word dogma, and the word father. And then on the next segment, I want you to write down the word he and art. And then the word dog and the word ma and the word fat and the word her. And if you look at those collections of words, heart, if you put a space in there between he and art, creates two different words. It's the proximity of the characters being on top of one another that allows you to create one word instead of having two words. Same thing with dogma and same thing with father. So their position in space and their closeness and proximity allows us to group them together and treat them as a single cohesive object. And that's one of the things in photography that I think is important as we start to critique photographs, create photographs, edit photographs, is we have to start to see how these small little elements of color, of light, of form, of shape begin to position themselves so that we understand how do they relate to one another in the photograph. Whether it be intentional or unintentional, if we start to understand how those relationships are being formed, we can allow that to inform how we experience the photograph. And hopefully how we make better photographs moving forward, because we start to see with some objectivity and with some ability to predict what's going to happen as we start to place these objects and align these objects in the creation of the frame. another sense of association. So that's a spatial association. There's also an association of time. And when we think about grouping by time, one of the things that's important there is how you arrange the objects and how we experience the objects as we move across the image will determine how we see and experience them. Now, viewing a photograph can happen very rapidly and it can happen very quickly, but the association we build across the image as we view an object from one side of the frame to the other side can help create a sense of cohesion within the photograph. The other thing that can happen is if you think about a couple of different images or a sequence or a body of work, the ability to create a grouping based on color, form, light, shape, subject, theme, feeling between one image and another, and how close those images may be together in the series, allows us to have a different sense of what works together and what doesn't work together, and what photographs as independent objects now start to group together. So that's one of the things in the critique process and the attempt to build a cohesive body of work that we're looking for is an attempt to use the proximity of one image to another so that as a group, they become more informative than they are as individual photographs. So even though we want really strong, really compelling, great photographs to stand on their own, we then want them to become even more complex and more informative as they start to group together. The last element around proximity, which is a side effect of the other elements, is just the grouping element. How do we see the whole as a group when we look at the individual parts? If you see two circles on opposite sides of an image, you would associate those two circles together. We hear this a lot with people saying how many triangles there are in a photograph. We start to see the little individual pieces one by one, and then we experience the whole object. Now, the challenge with that is if we have individual objects that are not somehow related to the whole, and we start to look at the photograph or we start to look at the object, we start to see the individual objects and can't build the relationship to build a cohesive whole. So one of the things we have to do is come back in and figure out how to make sure that the sum of those parts ultimately do lead to the whole story or the whole photograph that we're attempting to create, and we don't end up with something weird floating out there in space. So one of the ways you'll see this manifest in your work is you have a really great photograph, but then you're distracted by a red cup or a big white blob in the photograph or something that just doesn't look right in the photograph is a larger or smaller shape. And our eye gets drawn into that and we can't figure out how, based on its proximity, its size, its color, how does it relate to the other parts within the group? So that's the kind of thing you would want to look for as a key indicator that you're missing an element of strength in the overall photograph. The second piece I wanted to talk about this week was the law of closure. And that says that we will perceive objects as being complete even if they are not complete. So if I gave you the phrase Ink of America, you would fulfill the phrase Bank of America because you would complete the phrase knowing that it's a B that's missing in the statement. You wouldn't create Tank of America. You wouldn't create Crank of America because the initial reaction is to complete an already existing and known phrase. This is the same reason why if we have half of a person's face, we can imagine the other half. If we have part of a circle, we can complete the whole circle. Or as I said earlier, if we have bits of a triangle that's not drawn together, we will complete and close the triangle. That closure is really important because what it allows us to do is create a different sense of the space and a different sense of our perception of the space and allowing the photograph to extend beyond what happens within the frame. One of the ways that the law of closure comes into play in a subtle way in a photograph is having somebody look off of frame. So something is not in the image and there's a look in their eye that says the action or the moment is happening somewhere outside of our awareness. Our desire to create closure has us imagine what that person might be seeing, which then has us start to look into our own understanding of the other parts of our awareness of emotion and feeling within the individual. And we look at their expression on their face. We try to assign some level of feeling to that so we can start to figure out is what's happening off frame good or bad? Is it got a sense of tension to it? Is there confusion? Is there angst? Our desire to create the closure there is what creates an interest in the photograph. It's also what allows us to create edge tension and to create anxiety within the photograph. If we don't create closure and we don't give an easy way for somebody to have closure, it can create a sense of tension in the photograph that allows us to not really be able to close in on and define exactly what we're seeing or experiencing. And that can prove to be a challenge when we look at the photograph. One of the researchers in the Gestalt psychology was a Russian psychologist named Bluma Zeigarnik, who did a series of experiments where they talked about how if a task is interrupted, we're more likely to remember that task than we are tasks that were completed without an interruption. So basically, the experiment was I did some work, I was stopped, I then had to pick the work back up and able to complete the task, or the task was completed contiguously. People remembered and had a better experience when there was the interruption of the completion of the task. And this is one of the things that reinforces that notion of closure in the sense of the ambiguity that exists within the frame, is that if we are not able to complete the photograph, we will spend time trying to solve that even subconsciously after the fact. So by coming in after the fact and trying to create an experience of the photograph after the fact, we create a more compelling photograph. If the entire answer is given within the image, it becomes easy for the brain to have solved the task, mark it as to be as done, and then move on without having to return to it to figure it out. This may account for some of the reasons why when you look at photographs or you go to an art exhibit, you return back to photographs over and over again, even though you may not experience your initial reaction as something you like or something you're familiar with, but there was something about the photograph that compels you to look at it over and over again. It may be your attempt to understand and resolve some of those unanswered questions. There are so many interesting ways that we react and perceive the world, and there's a lot of research that's been done on how we actually go about this. Like I said, this Gestalt approach is one of the methods that we use to try to figure out and understand how we see the world. And like I said, the part that drew me to this was this notion of chaos. What we're going to look at next week around these two things, we're going to look at two other components that I think are really interesting when it comes to looking at the Gestalt approach to understanding how we experience and see images. One of them is the law of similarity, which says that within a set of objects or a set of things that are in the frame, we will group similar objects to one another, and we will remove objects that we believe are not similar and put them with another grouping. And what's interesting is that it happens across shape, color, shading, distance, size. So there's a lot of things that can cause a similarity to come into play. The other one we're going to look at is the law of past experience, which tells us that when we get in an area where we are unfamiliar with what we are seeing, we fall back to previous information that tells us how to interpret the work. I think those two things have a really good implication for how we perceive and understand photographs and for ultimately how we create photographs. I hope you have a great week behind the camera. I hope you're able to find some really interesting things out there to photograph and get a chance to get out there and rejuvenate your creativity. Don't forget, you can always find us up on iTunes. You can find us on Google Play, Spotify, all the places podcasts are found. And I will see you next time.